Why don't we go ahead and get settled, and we'll get into the material that we have for tonight. In that, if we're looking at technology in a particular, what is discipleship? What does a Christian life look like in a digital time, digital age? Then one of the subjects that we definitely need to talk about is social media. And if we're going to talk about social media, there are so many different social media platforms out there: Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, Pinterest, TikTok, Reddit, LinkedIn, Discord, Quora, Twitter, or X. But I think we could say that one of the big players in this is Facebook. And so I think if we focus upon Facebook, this will help us a bit. Although, you know, one of the things that I think I've noticed about social media is that there are certain social media apps that are for a certain segment of the population, and certain social media apps that are for others. I've noticed that, for example, my kids, they're not on Facebook. They're on other stuff because that's the hip thing to do, But nevertheless, let's talk about Facebook. It'll give us something to kind of focus our attention upon, and in so doing, it'll help us to understand not just how Facebook works, but ultimately how other social media platforms work. And so in that regard, we want to recognize here that this is the crazy thing, that where we have more than 7 billion people on the planet, there are at least 2.9 billion registered Facebook users. And so that means that nearly 40% of the world's population at least is registered for Facebook. And so we're going to talk about the fact that a significant number of the world is engaged with this particular platform. Now, we can say on the one hand, there are certainly a number of benefits to social media. You know, one of the things that I've been able to do that I wouldn't have been able to do in past generations is, for example, to keep up with friends that I haven't seen in a long time. You know, people, for example, that I went to seminary with nearly more than 30 years ago, I've been able to, you know, look them up, find them, reach out, and just say, hey, wanted, you know, to say hi. And it's interesting being able to connect in that way. We can do that with friends. We can do that with family. Churches, for example, have their Facebook page where they're announcing events and showing pictures of things that are going on in the life of the community. We can learn about the world, and we can learn about news that is unfolding, for example, in the world. But if one of the things that I'm hoping that we can do when, as we're thinking about the Christian life as it pertains especially to living in the digital age, is we always want to stop and ask the question, the critical questions about the nature of the technologies that we use. We want to ask the question, what are the benefits? But we also want to ask the question, what are the drawbacks? Because it was C.S. Lewis who said this. He said, for every conquest of nature, we're both left a little stronger, but also a little weaker. In other words, I don't think that we can ever say in a fallen world that there are only upsides to something. There's always going to be a downside to something. You know, I try to point this out to my students, that we would say, hey, the Reformation, it was all an upside. It was just all benefits. And we'd say, well, maybe not in every case. You know, you had, for example, nuns who embraced the teaching of the Reformation. Many of them got married, but there were a lot of nuns who weren't able to find spouses. And so all of a sudden, their nunnery closes. They have no place to live. They have no means of income, and they were essentially homeless. That's a side of the Reformation that we don't often hear about. Now, I'm not saying, therefore, that the Reformation was a bad thing. No, but we have to ask the question, what are the positives? What are the negatives? And then in what way might we be able to mitigate some of the negatives, or at least to be aware of them? You know, so for example, we can say, is social media a good thing? Okay, well, there are some positives. You know, so for example, churches can use social media as I said, but on the other hand, what are the drawbacks? And we'll talk about this in greater detail, but I think that often looking at the world through the lens of social media is often like looking through life through a soda straw. It puts a microscope upon a certain segment of life, and it gives us the impression that this must be how the world is, and if so, what is this going to do to my perception of the world? What is this going to do for the things that I think our church should be focusing upon? So, in other words, who's going to set the agenda for the church? Is it going to be looking at the world through the lens of social media, or is it going to be actually getting boots on the ground and talking to and engaging with the people that are actually in the community in the church? So that's one question that we want to ask. The second question that we want to ask is this, is if that's the corporate nature of social media, if there are questions that we want to ask as it pertains to church life, what kinds of questions should we be posing for our own personal individual use of social media? What are the upsides? What are the downsides? And so what we want to do is we want to ask those questions, you know, for the corporate life of the church, but also for the individual and how we engage these things. So the first thing that we want to do is we'll look at first, how is it that Facebook makes money? This is not always the most pertinent question, but it's often a typical and important question to ask. Who's making money? Where is it going to? Follow the money trail, and that's often going to tell us something about the nature of what it is that we're examining. So how does Facebook make money? Secondly, how does social media affect us? How does social media affect us corporately? How does it affect us individually? And it's not just a question of what are the upsides, but I think more importantly, what are the downsides? And then third and finally, we'll give thought to the question of, okay, so what kinds of remedies can we use in order to mitigate or in some cases maybe even eliminate the downsides of social media? So let's first ask the question, how does Facebook make money? How does it work? If we understand how it works, I think that's going to help us understand how we should be using it. Now, in 2017, Facebook generated $40 billion in ad revenue. In revenue, $39.9 billion of that was out of ad revenue. So Facebook makes the lion's share of its income from ad revenue, okay? and so in 2022, they generated $114 billion in ad revenue, and they expect that by 2027, which is in a little bit nearly 3 years, this figure is expected to grow to $127 billion and will account for 19% of the world's ad revenue total. So this is a huge chunk of the world's global ad revenue, and here Facebook is generating the bulk of it, or at least a huge percentage of it. And so this means that they make money from advertisements. So this is the thing. I always tell my kids this, and I think that they still don't believe me as much. You know, but I'm sure you've heard this too. I'm sure your parents told you this. My parents told me this. But they said, John, there's no free lunch. You know, there's always a cost somewhere. And this is the nature of social media and Facebook. They're like, sure, here's a free app. It's free for you to use. And the reason that they give it to you for free is because it's not so much that they're giving you something for free, rather, they are hooking you up to their plow so that they can plow the field with you. You are the engine that makes Facebook go. Because what they're doing is that they're harnessing your interests, and in particular, every time you click on something, especially on an ad, they get money for that. That's how they're generating their revenue, is by getting you to look at ads and to click on ads, okay? And so in this sense, what Mark Zuckerberg has said about the nature of Facebook is that Facebook is ultimately a mirror. Because for every input you throw into the social media app, it's going to do its best to reflect your interests and your desires. And they often do this quite slickly. When you put in a picture, you may not realize it, but you are essentially giving Facebook the copyrights to those images. Because what they do then is they use those images. They might use a person that you know in an advertisement. It gets your attention, draws you to it. That's somebody I know. Oh, look, it's over an ad of, whatever it may be, cough syrup or a certain brand of clothing or perhaps a certain vehicle or a vacation, whatever the case may be. But if you put in certain inputs, it's going to reflect what your interests are. Now, I, for the most part, I don't use Facebook all that much, okay? But my wife found out what I use it for, and she was kind of annoyed. She asked me one day, and this was not too long ago, she's like, why on earth are we getting so many Rottweiler puppy videos? And she says, who is clicking on this stuff? And I said, me. I'm clicking on it. She's like, why are you watching Rottweiler puppy videos? I said, they're cute. I think they're adorable. I mean, you have this brute of an animal, but it's really tiny. And it's very cute. And so, if you look in our Facebook, feed, you'll see, all sorts of Rottweiler puppy videos. And I think my wife finds it annoying. She's like, I don't need puppy videos, let alone of Rottweilers. But it's because I'm clicking on the videos, so they're like, this guy likes Rottweiler videos, let's give him more of what he wants. Okay, so here's the big question, is that if Facebook and other social media applications are a mirror of your interests, what are you actually seeing? Basically, you're just seeing a reflection of yourself. Now, what if you have good intentions and good interests? Well, then this could be potentially beneficial to you. But on the other hand, what if you aren't looking or clicking on the right things? Then this could be potentially negative because you are looking at essentially a mirror of yourself. I mean, we've all heard the story of Snow White, and we know what the Wicked Queen's famous statement is, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? Well, what happens if it's just we're looking into the mirror and all we're seeing is ourselves? This can become problematic. At the same time, you also have to ask the question, if Facebook is making their money from advertising, then this means that they're not necessarily going to send you information that is useful or helpful. They will only send you information that gets you to click on their ads. And so this is where, for example, we have to take into account that when you see news stories, for example, on Facebook, you have to ask the question. Here's the old form of the question. What sells newspapers? Okay, so let's transform the question for our context. What gets clicks? What gets views? So if we had two stories, Rottweiler puppy plays with fluffy ball, airplane crashes and kills 50. Well, you're going to click on the story that has the more fantastic headline because that's what grabs your interest. And so they're always going to be feeding you stories and even sometimes headlines that are fantastic or even misleading. I'm sure you've done this before where you see a headline, click on the headline, you read the story, and you're like, this headline had nothing to do with what the story said. It's because they weren't interested in really giving you a story. They're interested in getting you to click on the link so that they can generate more money. It's in this vein sometimes that we have to ask ourselves, what exactly are we interacting with on the internet? This is especially the case, for example, with search engines. They say that search engines are essentially a mirror of the users, but in some cases, they can also even be manipulated. This was a couple of years ago that I did this. I just did a little experiment. I thought, I want to see what pops up. And I was really surprised as to what popped up. I typed in the phrase, original sin is. Okay? And the reason I did that is because maybe you've seen some of these videos. They're, I think it's Vanity Fair interviews where they do interviews with celebrities. And it's the finish the Google statement. So for example, because Top Gun is one of my favorite movies of all time, we'll say, put it this way, you know, they type in Tom Cruise is, and then it's blank, and so then they rip off the answers. Or what kind of food does Tom Cruise eat? Or does Tom Cruise fly this kind of airplane? And so it fills in the information based upon the kinds of searches that people are doing. Here is what came up. Number one, original sin is a lie. First one. Second, original sin is taken away by the sacrament of. Well, that's Roman Catholic. We don't want that one. Original sin is wrong. Original sin is unbiblical. Original sin is false doctrine. Original sin is not in the Bible. Original sin is not biblical. Original sin is not fair. Original sin is blamed on. Virtually all of these are entirely negative towards the teaching of Scripture. And as these things pop up, people might be pushed in a certain direction to think certain things about truth. And yet it's shaping and pushing the conversation in a certain direction. How does the autocomplete skew searches? Well, in one sense, it's understandable. It's understandable because what happens here is this is simply a mirror of the users. And as the users put in the information, it reflects their sinful attitude. So it's not actually giving us any objective information. And maybe you saw this story in the news a couple of weeks ago, but in the wake of the assassination attempt against former President Trump, you would type into Google, into the search engine, searching for assassination attempt of President Trump. And what was popping up, the first stories that were popping up, stories about Vice President Harris, which means that somebody was skewing the search engines. Now, they quickly fixed that. But, you know, in other words, there are people that are manipulating these things. They're trying to push people and push the conversation in certain directions. So you have to ask questions such as, if this is a mirror and I'm sinful, and all I do is see a mirror of my own sinful desires, or if I'm looking into the mirror of social media and I'm actually being manipulated by the people that run it, exactly what am I using and how is this helpful or hurtful to me? You know, this is the question that you have to ask at this point. Am I using social media, or is social media using me? That's the big question. All right, so let's ask this question in terms of, you know, how does this affect us first corporately? Let's ask this question. So this is our second key topic here, which is how does social media affect us? And in particular, we're thinking here at this point of the downsides of things. So, so how does it affect us corporately? If we're looking at the world through social media, then what that may do is give us a completely skewed view of what's actually going on in the world. If it's being shaped by economic interests, companies and their advertising, if it's being shaped by people with agendas for the culture, I did this one time. I wish I could show you the results now, and I'd be curious as to what the results turn up these days. But I went to Google, put in an image search, and I put in a white two-parent family. And not a single Caucasian person came up in the search, and there were a lot of homosexual couples in the picture. So if this is where they're trying to push the conversation, and this is the lens through which people are looking at the world, the question is how do we actually determine what our community needs if our perspective on the world is being shaped by social media as we look through the soda straw of the application? What if the application is saying, this is a big problem with the world, you need to deal with this, but when you actually look into your community, you don't see any of those problems? Which direction are you going to want to push the church? And so often this is the case. I don't think that the world is any worse off than it has ever been in any other point in the history of the world. I like to tell my church history students this all the time. We are just as messed up as any previous generation, going all the way back to the beginning. You know, we're not the first generation to mess things up. The problem is that with social media, it shines a spotlight on a lot of problems, and it gives us the impression that we are worse off than previous generations. You know, we say, well, weren't things better in the 50s? Because, you know, to use this, and this is going to date me, and maybe some of you will know what I'm talking about. Some of you youngsters are going to have to Google it. It wasn't it a Leave It to Beaver world back in the 50s? You know, where, you know, the worst is that the beaver got in trouble, you know, for breaking somebody's window, you know, and that was the worst thing that kind of happened. Well, you got to remember, in the 50s, you still had the Korean War. In the 50s, you still had the war in French Indochina and Vietnam. You still had all sorts of problems regarding civil rights. You also had all sorts of problems with, such as, for example, say in the early 60s, I think our politicians at that point were just as, you know, immoral as our politicians are today. It's just that now we've got a spotlight and you can't go anywhere without somebody recording you doing something. Back in the 60s, the press shielded the Kennedy administration from much of these things. I don't think that we're any worse off than we are. It's just that we've just got a spotlight on certain segments, and what drives the spotlight? Money. They want to get you to click on the story. Okay, so that's the problem as far as corporately. Secondly, we want to think about this individually. You know, again, we always want to tout the benefits of the technology, and I don't want to downplay the benefits. But how often do we ask about the costs, the downsides? And that a number of authors, psychologists especially, have been doing and conducting studies on the impact of social media upon the mental health of its users. And there's a psychologist by the name of Jean Twenge, who's at the University of California, San Diego, UCSD, and she says that right around 2012, just a couple of years after the introduction of the smartphone and then the wedding of the smartphone to the social media app, you see a dramatic spike in reported cases of depression, especially among teenagers and especially among young women, women who are teenagers. And so what she says is this, and she said this in her latest, one of her latest books, iGen. This is the label that she gives to the present generation. iGen, is on the verge of the most severe mental health crisis for young people in decades. On the surface, though, everything is fine. Maybe some of you have heard of the book written by Jonathan Haidt, The Anxious Generation, how the great rewiring of childhood is causing an epidemic of mental illness. This was published earlier this year. He too is pointing out that the use of social media and the dramatic increase of reported cases of depression is not simply a coincidence. Mark Zuckerberg, when he was giving his testimony before a Senate subcommittee hearing in January of this year, said, hey, mental health is a complex thing. We don't know all of the causes of everything, but large in part, I think that these two things are not connected. You know, so people were saying, no, this is not causation. This is simply correlation. What do we mean by that? Well, when you see the rooster crow or you hear the rooster crow and then the sun comes up, somebody might say, oh, look, the rooster caused the sun to rise. And then somebody would say, no, that's correlation. Those two things just happen at the same time. It's not that the rooster causes the sun to come up. It just happens at the same time. The rooster sees it, so he crows. That's correlation. Causation, we could say, we can flip it and say the sun coming up is the cause of the rooster crowing. So depending upon which side you look at, that's the case. So what they're saying here is they're just saying it's a coincidence that there's an increase in depression. It could be attributed to many other causes. And it's a coincidence that it just so happens to happen around the same time as the rise of social media. But now there are many, many studies coming out. You know, I heard this phrase from Coach Deion Sanders when they beat the TCU Horned Frogs last year in their, I think it was in their season opener, and they won, you know, beating the previous year's national champs. He said, we come in and we bring in receipts. And I thought, that's hilarious. You know, so people here are producing the receipts. They're producing the receipts to saying, no, there are studies that show there is a direct link between social media use and mental depression. Mental depression. So now the question is why? Why is there this connection? All right, so let's dig into this a little bit deeper. The bottom line here is that as real as social media looks, it's all fake. It's all fake. I'm not saying that everybody uses it as fake, but it just presents a skewed view of the world. Well, how so? Well, let me give you a case in point. If you look in our bedroom at home, we have a picture of the three children, and I think they were like, you know, 2, 5, and 7 or 8, something like that. I don't know how far apart they are. I leave that stuff to my wife. You know, it's like you go to pick up drugs, and they're like, what's your child's birthday? And I'm like, whoa, no, nobody said there's going to be a math test. I'm sorry, you know, I can tell you the day, but now I got to start counting. I think it's 2013. They're like, it's fine. You got it close enough. And I was like, all right, praise the Lord, because my kid needs medicine. But if you look at that picture, you think, oh, look at the dear children. They look so sweet. That's like the 1 millisecond that they were all smiling. Because my daughter was like, you know, just pitching a fit. And maybe we got 10 good pictures where she was smiling, which represents a total of 3 seconds in those 2 hours, you know, that we were traipsing around this location to take family photos. And she was just, I mean, I love her and she's great, but she was a monster that day. But you look at that picture and all you see is, oh, look how cute she is. I'm like, yeah, that's Godzilla right there, just little tiny Godzilla. I mean, she was awful. Oh, my word. And so every time I see that picture, I think, that's a joke. That's a really bad joke. You know, it's like, I know what went on in that day. That's the way social media is. We're always taking pictures of, you know, when the good things happen, okay? And I will say this, and if any of you do this, it's okay. I'm going to step on your toes as hard as I know how. People put up, you know, mediocre pictures of their food. It's like, I don't really care about this. You know, why do I need to see, you know, a piece of meatloaf? It's like, no, you know, please stop. You know, for the love of humanity, stop posting pictures of mediocre meals. I don't want to know. So we're putting up these pictures, and it's always the best of life. So that's what I mean when I say it's fake. Because we're not putting up pictures when we wake up with a migraine, you know? And, you know, the hair's everywhere. And it's just like, oh, I feel like I've been run over by a truck. We're not taking pictures when, you know, hey, let me get a selfie when I've got the flu. And putting that up there. Sometimes people post, you know, quote unquote, the bad days. But it gives this impression that life is always grand. How does this affect the users? There's another thing. My kids did this one to me, and to this day, I am still just terrified at what I saw. I'm terrified at what I saw, and I was grossly offended. There's all kinds of filters. You know, maybe you've played with some of these. My kids do this all the time. They took a picture of me that turned me into a woman. It was frightening. It was no longer John Fesco. It was Joanna. And I was like, I don't think I can gouge out my mind's eye fast enough. That just looked horrific. This is terrible. I mean, I had long hair. I had feminine features. And I was like, I was really confused. And I can't tell you how disruptive it was to my heart. I mean, I was just like, oh my word, this is horrible. Okay, well, they have all sorts of filters. And I won't say who does this in my life because this may be recorded and then they'll see it and then they'll be offended. But there's somebody in my life, nobody under my roof, nobody relatively close, where I'm always seeing the pictures. I'm like, man, they look good, really good. And my wife's like, yeah, they're using a filter. And I'm like, are you sure? And then the boys come over. Oh, yeah, big time. That's a filter. I saw this story. This bride was getting her pictures taken. And the photographer made the mistake of showing her the pictures before she did any of her Facebook magic and before she did any of her filters and before she did any touch-up with Photoshop. And the bride started weeping at how ugly she looked because she wasn't used to seeing herself as she really was. It was always with the filters, always with this improved version of life. What happens to young girls is that they see these beautiful pictures, they take the picture, and then they look at it and they're like, why doesn't mine look as good? And they get depressed. Or what happens is that their friend puts up a picture and they say, huh, my friend got 100 likes. I'm going to post my picture. It's going to be way better. And then I'll get 200 likes. And then they get 5. And then they sink in depression because they're like, why didn't my post get as much? And so they get depressed. Why is this the case? Don't have time to go into all the science, but there's a book by an author by the name of Jaron Lanier, 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts. And what he documents in there, he used to work for these companies, and he said, I got out because it was immoral. He said, we get psychologists to help us design these apps, and these are the same people that are designing slot machines. They're as addictive as the slot machine. You ever wonder why on the social media app you have an infinite scroll? Because they're trying to keep you on, and they're trying to convince you, just scroll a little bit more and you'll find what you're looking for. The more they can keep you on the app, the longer they can keep you engaged. The more they can keep you engaged, the more you'll look at their ads and click on their ads. They're trying to keep you in there. Again, there's a book called Hooked. And it's a book that teaches you the principles of creating an addictive phone app. So there's books out there to teach you how to do this. And the way the author puts this is he says, manipulation is an experience crafted to change behavior. We know what it all feels like, yet manipulation doesn't always have to have a negative connotation. So they're admitting flat out, oh yeah, we're manipulating you. We're manipulating you. But we can manipulate you for good. It doesn't always have to be for bad. And so people might say, well, isn't this the same way that television used to work? And the answer is no. It's very different. With social media apps versus TV, TV is a communal event. You sit down and everybody watches it. Unless you're in my house and then people talk. And it's just like, for the love of humanity, stop talking. But Dad, why did that guy just shoot that guy? Hey, if you stop talking and listen, maybe you'll get an answer. Oh, look, 10 seconds later, you get an answer to your question. I don't know if your kids do that, but oh my goodness. It's like, stop talking. So in that sense, it's even communal. We talk to each other. I just don't want to talk during the movie. But we talk after the movie. What did you think of that? Did you think that that was representative of Christian behavior? Did you notice what that one character said and why they said it? What do you think of that? Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? We talk, not all the time, but a lot of the times we do. With social media, guess what? It's you. You're the star. The camera's pointed back at you. It's all about you. All right, quickly, we don't have time to go into this in great detail, but I want to at least identify some key principles here. Because what's going on with the social media apps is not only does it give us a distorted picture of our communities because we're looking through a soda straw, but these social media apps are designed to make us addictive the same way that a slot machine is addictive and it produces the rush when you get the result that you want. This is the science behind the social media app. It's creating an addiction in you. That's why kids, for example, will spend in excess of 2 to 3 hours or more per day on these apps. So I think the first thing that we want to note is this, is that when we look at the conduct of the church in Acts chapter 2 was committed to embodied interaction. Now people might say, well, of course, they were ancient people. What else are they going to do? They didn't have Nintendos. They didn't have Facebook. They didn't have the internet. Of course they couldn't interact over long distance. They're going to be, together. But I'm going to say, no, I think that that activity transcends time and transcends every generation in the sense that the Lord never intended for us to be apart. He's made us with bodies, and if we have bodies, then that means that we interact with one another physically. How many of you during, the depths of the COVID lockdowns, I bet you never thought this in a million years, but you thought, I can't wait to get back to church. I'm sorry, worshiping this way through watching the live stream, it's not the same. I miss seeing the people. They've documented this, and there's scientific studies behind it that when you give somebody a hug, they get a shot of dopamine. It literally makes them feel better. We were meant for embodied interaction. And so when it says in Acts 2:42 and following that they were breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God. When Paul says in Colossians 3:16 that we're supposed to admonish one another in wisdom through the singing of psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. One of the things that my family does is we typically will put my daughter to bed, all of us together, and we pray with her and pray together as a family, and then we have a closing little song that we sing. And we sing that song. Now, mind you, sometimes we sing 5 different versions of that song all at the same time. It's a train wreck, but we're still singing. I think that that's what Paul's talking about. What does James say? James 5:16, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another. That means meeting with somebody, talking to them, physically engaging them. The author of Hebrews says in Hebrews 10:25, don't neglect to meet together. Don't neglect to meet together. So in this sense, as we're seeking to shape an agenda for the church, we should say, I've got to discern what the true needs of the church body are by physically being with people, talking with people, praying with people, listening to their needs, giving people hugs, giving them handshakes. In this vein, one of the dehumanizing aspects of social media is that my counseling colleagues say this at the seminary, 85% of communication is bodily and is nonverbal. I'm half Mexican. If you want to silence me, tie my hands behind my back. Oh man, it's tough for me. I don't like to talk this way. It's very confining. This is why, you see this. You hear the tone of my voice. You see the expression on my face. You see my hands moving. There's so much more to communication. And so this is what we need to help us to shape the corporate life of the church. But here, this is the thing that we also have to ask is where do our young people, where do we get our sense of self-worth? Are we getting our sense of self-worth by how we look in a picture? Are we getting our sense of self-worth from the number of likes that we get on a post? Are we getting our sense of self-worth by the image that we create of ourselves on social media, or do we get our sense of our self-worth in our union with Christ? Do we get our sense of self-worth in knowing that our Heavenly Father has shown us mercy, and despite and in spite of our sinfulness, rebels that we are, He gave us the most costly gift that He could ever conceive of, which is giving us His only begotten Son, sending Him to the cross to suffer and die for us so that He would present us before the Father without spot, wrinkle, or blemish. That's where we find our true worth. That's where we find our value. It cannot be and should never be in what the social media apps tell us. So we have to find our value in Christ Himself. Some practical things to keep in mind, and then I'll stop here and I'll see if we have some time for some questions. Is that, consider deleting the applications. One of the things that I'm not saying necessarily delete the accounts, but my kids will ask me this. I don't use Facebook that much. I don't use Instagram that much. My wife runs those accounts for me, and I do them for work. I have a Twitter account, but I use it in a very limited fashion. I just post positive things. And if you look at my social media account on Twitter, I like practically nothing. I don't click on it ever, because I don't want to start that dopamine chain. And if I put something up, I don't care what happens to it. I'm just trying to be positive, because I'm trying to use this as a platform to say, I want to let people know about my latest speaking engagement or my latest book that's coming out, something like that. I'm using it in that sense. I'm using the app. I'm not letting the app use me. But one of the things that the designers of these apps say that make them addictive is accessibility. You have to make it accessible. So my kids will say, Dad, why don't you have the Twitter app? I'm like, don't want it. Why don't you have the Facebook app? Why don't you have the Instagram app? I don't want it. Why? Because it's easier to use. But isn't it a pain to use it through the web browser? Uh-huh. Well, why do you want it to be difficult? Because it's more difficult to access, which means I don't want to access it as much because it's a pain in the rear end. You know, another thing that we have to consider is you could use app timers. How much time am I spending on the app? Or maybe you should ask yourself, why am I using this? With my first Instagram account, I was using it, and after a while I thought, I'm not sure why I'm posting the things that I'm posting. I think I may be posting these things because I'm showboating. And my family gets after me for this. If I think that I'm doing something I shouldn't, burn it to the ground, blow it up, cut it off, smash it, destroy it, get rid of it. And my wife's like, why did you get rid of your Instagram account? That was a great handle. Now we've got this lame handle of J.V.Fesco instead of just JV Fesco. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry. Sometimes I feel like I need to burn the bridges. Well, maybe that's what we need to do. If we discover, and through this conviction of the Holy Spirit, that we're using it improperly and for the wrong reasons, maybe we need to burn the bridge. Burn it down and don't look back. Burn it down and don't look back. At the end of the day, I would encourage you to this. Ask the question, what are the downsides? Ask the question, am I using the app or is the app using me? Ask the question, are you engaging in life in an embodied state, going into the creation, going into the church, talking to people physically, not connecting with them online, but physically connecting with them by seeing them, spending time with them. You know, and in all of this, are we letting something displace the one place that God has given us for Himself and or for the community and the people around us? Remember, you are bought with a price, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7:23. Do not become the bondservants of men. Do not become the bondservants of these social media apps. Instead, make sure that we're always the bondservant of Christ.